is really
the wrong thing.
It bound man to a religion and said nothing beyond this. That is how all the religions have been over centuries. Take Christianity, take Islam, take Hinduism, take Buddhism, which are there still even now. But each one says that they are the path. When you use the word the path, then we become wrong. That is where religions have all gone wrong. They could not really change man at all. They said only going towards God. So because of this binding, because of this social religious pressure that this is the only way, in India we found a different method. They became ascetics, sannyasis. So somebody, they said, no, Hinduism or this ism, when the Brahmin in India said you must do only this puja and that puja and this ceremony, he said to hell with it, he became a sannyasi. And sannyasi was the most liberated man. He had no religion, he had no society, no morality, no ethics. He said, I am beyond society, beyond religion. I create my own religion. So this is how, as a reaction here, in India produced hundreds and thousands of sannyasis. But this is also a kind of a negative thing that came in Indian society. And of course in the Western society we have monks and the nuns, nunneries, and this where they withdrew from life. They lived their own cloistered life. But it was a kind of a withdrawal. So Mother and Sri Aurobindo would say, this is the second phase that an individual or the society in general went through. But even now there are lots of people following this. We don't have to do much in this, except you remember the day you have to go to the church. Beyond that, you don't have to do anything else. In Hinduism, we go on Friday, you go on Sunday, Muslim goes on Friday, and I go on Tuesday. So what has happened? It has become an action that you do a certain thing and your passport and your seat is reserved in heaven. That is what it came to be. That if you behave well as I tell you, I'll book your seat in heaven when you leave the world. I mean, these were the kind of the parameters that religion gave us. But we today see, why is man what he is today? In spite of so many religions, so many saints, so many sadhus, nothing has happened to the world. It, on the contrary, has gone back to worse. So here comes Sri Aurobindo. He says, man must evolve from here. He goes through this. But this is where lies the future. Now this is the word, spirituality. Why spirituality has come now? Of course it was an ascending process. Man also had to go through this towards God. Imagine a vital physical man who has nothing but only food and labor and sleep and procreation as his ideal. For him, even to take a step towards the divine, towards God, is a very important step. It is a kind of an evolution in him. He says, oh God, instead of looking upon earth, he starts looking to heaven. It is a necessary state, no doubt about it. We cannot say it was not necessary. And this is what is extremely beautiful with Sri Aurobindo. Read the Life Divine. That nothing on this earth has been useless. Nothing is wrong, he would say. Mother would go to the extent of saying, there's nothing as mistake and error and wrong. Why? Because everything serves its purpose in the evolutionary march. Even a so-called wrong movement, you will see later on, that it brought you something positive. It really, maybe it changed your direction. It really brought you in contact with somebody. So he says in the history of mankind's thought, every philosophy, people have attempted here, there. He says, the wrong is when a thought, a movement, a cult, a religion lives beyond its time. This is where things go beyond and they become what we say wrong or evil things in society. So what Sri Aurobindo would mean is society must constantly progress, and in that you realize that the next step is coming. So this is where we have landed now. This is the age of what we call the spiritual age. Is the new dawn. Mother long back said, the days of religion are gone. Now you say, how is it gone? Don't I see all the wars in the world, the Middle East and India, Pakistan and everywhere in Russia? But that's precisely when something is about to vanish, that it tries its hardest to remain. You see, what we call the fundamentalism grows more, because once I remember a message that Mother had given in Auroville. I was in Auroville from 70 to 76. She said, falsehood when it goes away, or when it's going away, it tries to have the last lashes with its tail. I mean, you know, imagine the crocodile lash. The last lash of the tail is the hardest one. So she says, falsehood is being pushed out with this new consciousness of the supermind. So all that is wrong in religion, all that is wrong in human beings, I mean, I really wonder with my own country, so much of corruption is coming out in my country, right from the Prime Minister to the peon. All these days, everybody was very comfortable with their little corruptions, with their cheating, with their murders, with the wrong thing. But somehow now everything is coming up on the surface. Even religion was pretty good. I mean, we all had our nice bread and wine and little houses. But why is it that everyone is becoming fundamental? That this is what is happening. With the coming of the new age, what is not useful for the new age is being wiped off. And because there is a wiping off, there are clashes. So do not think that the present world is the image of the future. Or is there any depression in you? Should not be there seeing the present situation. It is the last lash of the tail of the falsehood, in which it is trying to destroy as much as possible. Stay on, cling on in some forms through some people. But he says, this is gone. But those religions which can revive themselves and become Catholic, become universal, become embracive, go towards spirituality, they may remain. Remain in a new form, not in the old form at all. Because form must change. However, coming to spirituality, now this is where we are. I mean, the new dawn has already come, and we are living in this age, thanks to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, and thanks more to what they have done, that is bringing down the supermind. Because remember, Mother and Sri Aurobindo's sole mission was to bring the supermind down. Their mission was not to create an ashram, not to create an Auroville, not to create any centers, not to create anything. Externally they worked. Sri Aurobindo, as you saw, as I told you, about his freedom movement, about this, about his writing. But their entire mission was to bring that force down, and then Sri Aurobindo said, once that comes down, that will take care of humanity. It's exactly like saying, once the sun comes up, any one of us can see the sun wherever we are. So what is important is to bring the supramental sun into the horizon of man's ken, man's possibilities. Till now the supramental sun was hidden beyond, as the Upanishads tell us, the golden lid. Upanishad, one of the Upanishads tells us that there is the sun beyond the golden lid. What is that golden lid? We can guess it. The overmind. So the Upanishadic rishis said there is a golden sun. They saw it, but then they left it at that. But it is the mother, as you know, the 56 experience, who broke that golden door and let that golden light come down. So what they have wanted to do is not to be gurus, not to be called even avatars, but they have come with this soul mission to open the doors of the supermind. And now it's flooding the earth. So today you are existing in this remote corner. It's purely because of the intense working of the supermind, which for us has taken the name called Mother and Sri Aurobindo, but for others it may not. So that is why I say spiritual age has dawned. But once the age has dawned, what is important is there must be receivers. You see, Mother has done her work of pulling it down. And Sri Aurobindo had to sacrifice his body for bringing down this force. And when I say sacrifice, you know the meaning, that of, you know the story of Shiva, how he brought the Ganges down on his head. You know, there's in mythology, there's a story that Ganges, what we call Ganga. In India, as you know, we consider all rivers as goddesses. It is not a geographical thing. We give the name of Goddess Ganga, Goddess Saraswati, Goddess Mahanadi. We call them as goddesses. So this goddess Ganga was to be brought down. Shiva, with his own tapasya, he wanted to bring that goddess Ganga for the earth, which is thirsty. We'll see, take it symbolically, and then we'll see. And then the goddess said, look, if I go straight on earth, earth will crack up. Because of the pressure, the force with which I'll land on earth, earth may burst. So what to do? I cannot come down even if you want me to come down. Then Shiva said, come on my head. That he had a jeta, you must have seen Shiva's paintings, huge hair, you know, beautiful curling hair with a moon and all that. And you would see in that painting, always the Ganges is there, the goddess Ganges is on one side. He said, land on my head. My head will take the shock of your landing. And then from there, let it flow upon earth. So that is how it is said, the goddess Ganges came down. But for us, it has a new meaning. This is exactly what happened to Sri Aurobindo himself. He wanted to bring down the supramental Ganges. He struggled to bring it down, he contacted it right in mid-20s. And even he was pulling it down, he saw man is not ready. There is nobody to receive it. In fact, because of that pressure, there was on the contrary a tremendous reaction upon earth. Because this is how we have seen man is always a bit negative, is resistant. We have crucified Christ, one who came to deliver. We have crucified. I mean, this is a common theme with humanity. Any divine man who comes, we reject him first. Because we don't want to change. We are very happy with our ignorance. We say in our churches and temples, oh God, give me happiness, deliver me from suffering. But when the God-man comes,
We don't want him because he wants us to change too much. So he says, no, let us be comfortable with our little ignorance. So this is what happened when Sri Aurobindo was bringing down the super mind. And partly because of that resistance, the story of the World War II happened. That is when the Asuric forces, they also wanted to conquer the world, earth. One side there was Sri Aurobindo, bringing the new consciousness. As against that, the Asuras from the world of the occult forces, they unleashed all their forces in order to occupy the earth. This second war, some of you might have read, is not a war between allies and axis. It was really Sri Aurobindo's war. Sri Aurobindo calls it the mother's war. Because this was a war, if the axis had won, Sri Aurobindo said, earth civilization, mankind's civilization will go back by 2000 years. That means that would be the kind of barbarism that would come back to earth. The spiritual age would have to wait for 2000 years more. That is why it was a very imminent thing that Mother and Sri Aurobindo put all their force and strength behind the allies in order to resist and to destroy Nazism and the leaders. Well, that was the resistance from the Asura. But once that was broken, remember the war finished 44. And now Sri Aurobindo wanted to establish the supermind. It had a victory. But it could not be brought down. Because remember, after the war, there's still resistance. We are not yet set, ready to receive a new force. So exactly like the story of Shiva and the Ganges, Sri Aurobindo said, come on to my body. My body will take the first shock. My body I will leave, because with the shock, this body will be destroyed. But at least the earth will have the supramental force. And that is his mission. By hook or crook, the faster you bring the supermind, the safer and secure is mankind. Otherwise, you know, after the first war, in 30 years we got a second war, and another 50 years we would have had a third war. So Sri Aurobindo saw that the only security is to bring this new consciousness and deposit it on earth. That is why Sri Aurobindo left his body. It is not that he died. That is why we say Sri Aurobindo never died. He left his body willingly, only for the sake of humanity. Otherwise today we would not be seeing this day quietly following a new ideal. We would be more and more toward barbarism. You must have seen the concentration camps. What kind of a barbarism? It's not even a barbarism. It is a pure Asura, the pure devil that was working in man. A common man, a sane man, will never do what was done during the war. Because of those vital beings that had possessed each of these generals or soldiers or anybody, that they became not even human beings, they became not even animal, they became really Asuras. So that was the danger with which, against which Sri Aurobindo and the mother fought. So after that, in 1950, Sri Aurobindo sacrificed his body. So what Sri Aurobindo has done for mankind, we may not understand for many centuries. But Mother said, such beings of divine, they do not need your recognition. If I write an article, I need my full name and print it and copyright and everything. But the divine doesn't really need any copyright. He says, he comes and does his work, whatever he was meant to do. So this is how, I would say, in 1950 was the dawning of the spiritual, new spiritual age. Now, but I started saying, they have done their work, but not, we have to do our work. Because we have not done it earlier, Sri Aurobindo sacrificed his body. But 50 years have gone by. It's high time that man does his work of receiving this force. It is there. It's available. sunlight is there, if I open that window, then only I see the sunlight. If I keep it closed, the sun will always remain on top. We are not able to receive. So this receiving the new force is another name for integral yoga. When you have started school for integral yoga, you must understand it is here.
It is only in spirituality that yoga is applicable. There is no yoga here. There is no yoga here. These are all creeds and customs and laws and all that. But the vehicle, or I would say the practical aspect of the spiritual theory is called yoga. So yoga by itself means, innately it means practice. If you want to do just theory, you have theology, you have philosophy, you have metaphysics. Every yoga has its own metaphysics and everything. But when it comes to the practical side, we call that yoga. Come back. Thank you.
The speech is miracle.
Yeah, this is the place of yoga. I'm sure because this is a school of yoga, you all know the definition. But I would like to emphasize a couple of things in the definition itself. Because what normal people understand, I'm sure we have a different understanding. Normally, in America and Europe, I've seen centers of yoga, which means centers of asanas. What is practiced in Hatha Yoga? In Hatha Yoga, we have plenty of asanas, which again, because of the contact with the West, it has changed its form. They have become exercises for a particular disease. If somebody says, I have a stomach ache, then it's okay, you do this yoga. If I have a back ache, originally yoga is not at all that. It is a set of full exercises. And what is it, of course? To give you a kind of a flexibility. And of course, the blood circulation goes fine. Your organs work well. But with all these things, there's one essential thing, that yoga must be done in absolute quietness. It brings a kind of a stillness to the body. It is not to be done in an atmosphere where you are, you know, excited. We have turned it into a kind of an excitement with background music and rhythm and music. We are supposed to do this in a very quiet, it is almost the meditation of the body. That must be, because each time you are doing, it is not any fast movement, you know that. Each gesture that you do, you have got to put all the concentration on the body. So it is a kind of a development of the body consciousness itself. It is not just to say flexing your muscles. And you would have seen that at the end of the yoga session, you get automatically into a meditative mode. That is the beauty of the asanas. That it brings you a mental, because the body is so still, the nervous system is still so beautifully, that the mind really plunges into a kind of meditative mode. And most of the yoga systems would end up with a meditation, always. That is the right way, in fact, because the person is really prepared, very well tuned for this meditation. But that is what has come to be commonly known as asanas and yoga. But our yoga has nothing to do with that. In the true sense, yoga, the word is yuj, meaning union. Now the question is, union, what is the union with? You unite yourself with something. Well, you would say, well, union with God. So basically, the moment you say, I am doing yoga, be careful now. Are you really attempting to unite yourself with God? Or is it a few do's and don'ts? That is the very first clarification we must have in our own mind. When I say I want to come to school of integral yoga, or I want to do integral yoga, or I want to do yoga, let's be very clear with ourselves. Either I want to do this kind of a thing, or no. Let me say I'm not able to do it. It's simple. Be honest with oneself. Let yoga not become a fashion. It is a bit of a fashion in America. Plenty. Oh, you know, I'm into yoga, they say. What do you mean I'm into yoga? As if one would say I'm into drugs. They call this another drug and another addiction. You cannot be into yoga. You have to start the journey toward this. But this is the general meaning. But Sri Aurobindo says, you have read, all of you, many of you have read this book. But on the contrary, he says, all life is yoga. Then that confuses us. If all life is yoga, then where is this question of union with the God comes in? Does that mean that in everything in life we must search for the union with God? So when you say all life is yoga, this is specific meaning. Because in the name of all life is yoga, I may do all my stupidities, all my fancies, all my desire fulfillment, and they say, no, I am doing yoga, because Sri Aurobindo himself has said this, all life is yoga. Do what you want, this is part of yoga. Well, basically, truly all life is yoga. Because Sri Aurobindo in the synthesis, you are reading the synthesis, you will see in the first few chapters how it describes that actually nature itself, herself is doing yoga. Nature has started this process of yoga. Yoga in the sense of union with God. You will say, how is nature doing that? Through the evolutionary process. And what is that evolutionary process? That also you know. Nature started with matter. Then came life. Then came mind. What is this evolutionary process? It's not just simple matter, life and mind. At each level, nature herself is going closer to the divine. This is the essential understanding of what we call evolution. Evolution is nothing but at each step going closer to the divine. In what sense? Matter, you know, here I'll take a little diversion to tell you about this, then only I'll come back to this. You remember Sri Aurobindo's basic philosophy? Those of you who are reading the Savitri or the synthesis, you would know. We have in Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, this is just to give you a a broad idea. Philosophically, if you want to understand Sri Aurobindo, you understand only one concept. If you are thorough with this concept, you will understand the life divine, you will understand synthesis, you will understand Savitri. The concept of involution and evolution. In every book, it is the same theory applies. Call it human cycle or man, life divine is the same thing. On the Veda is the same thing. Future poetry is the same thing. Synthesis of yoga is the same thing. The same theory of involution and evolution. What is this involution? For this we have seen, as he explains, in the life divine, when he starts telling about the question of the creation, he says when the Supreme Divine, which he calls as Sachidananda, the word is Sat, Chit and Ananda. Sat means existence, Chit means consciousness and Ananda is bliss. He said, this is the Supreme who first wanted to create. When you say, I want to create, I want to make a new building, what do we do? I get wood from the forest, I get some materials, I put things together that I find outside of myself. That is creation. If you want to create this box, then you find some materials, you put them together, cut them together, you make. But God did not create the world like that. Where was the material to be found to make the earth? There's nothing outside Him. So God never created the earth. What we say is God became the earth. That is the major theological, metaphysical understanding. It is not the creation of God. It is the becoming of the divine. Become means what? Now you see the whole difference. If you use the single word, God or the divine became the world, completely whole notion is different. Means, everything that is there is Him. There's nothing that is not within Him or that is not Him. That is why we have the famous saying, Brahman is in all and all is in Brahman. That is the major Vedantic philosophy. Brahman means, you should know, means the Supreme Divine. We call Him the Brahman. So Brahman is in all and everything is in Brahman. So if this is a central philosophy of Sri Aurobindo, then you see our life itself changes so much. You see, like for example, the Buddha. He did not believe in the Brahman. He said, no, this life is sorrow and suffering. It's true. We all find it sorrow and suffering. So he said, for getting rid of this sorrow and suffering, the best way is to get into Nirvana. So he said, I'll give you some eightfold path, follow these four noble truths, and gradually you'll get into Nirvana. You get into that kind of a blissful state where the world is lost for you. But the world is not really lost. You are lost to the world. But he says that is the best way. Then after 1,000 years, Shankaracharya, another great philosopher, came and he said, world is not only a place of sorrow and suffering, but world is a maya, is all a dream, is an illusion. It doesn't even exist. So you see how far philosophers and saints have gone. But where is this truth? Where the Vedanta, where Sri Aurobindo says, world is a becoming of the divine. means world is real. It is as real as the divine. You cannot call it Maya and you cannot escape from it. So first thing he said is, all of us are essentially divine. All these human beings, all these animals, all these birds, all these leaves, all these insects, all these ants, they are all essentially divine. It is only through this stage of evolution the divine is unraveling himself. Unraveling means revealing himself. First, imagine, you know, if say I put on myself this dress, over that I put a raincoat, and over that I put another big coat and another big coat, I hide myself. So when you see me, I put a big box over me, you can't even see me. So that dark box in philosophy is called the inconscience. It is like saying, you know, I'm sitting in the house. If you are outside this house, you cannot know that I'm inside here. That means I am completely lost in the house. So that is where we call the word inconscient. Means the divine is completely hiding himself. But imagine after this, I take out the big box over me. Then already between the house and the box, there's a difference. So that is called the matter. Box is removed from me, you see a thick big raincoat. But you see still my form is becoming more and more visible. First it was the house, where he said, no, nothing like Anandendra doesn't exist here. But then the box came, even there you say, no, I don't think he lives here. He's not there in the box, because we see only the box. But when you take out the box, you see me with a big raincoat, then suddenly you see a kind of a human form. That third stage is the light. And then I take out the raincoat, I have only the jacket on me. Then I say, oh yeah, I see a man here. But I don't know which man, because there's still the raincoat cap is there, I cannot see him. But now I recognize him as a man. Then Sri Aurobindo says, take out that raincoat and that cap, you will see the Superman. That is the true man. The Superman is really the true man, the true divine man. So we should not really think that Superman is something very different and very far. It is really the man at its truest is the divine man. So now if you understand this, this is what is the divine's involution. It is like the divine has put upon himself cloak after cloak, cloak after cloak, then a box, then something, and hid himself in the inconscient. That is called the process of involution. And from here, the process of evolution begins. As I just now told you, take out the house, take out the box, take out the raincoat, take out this. So each time I am showing myself more and more. So at the level of man, the divine has shown himself pretty well. We can at least recognize the human form. But still, there is the hood which is dark and I am not yet complete. The luminous personality within is not seen. So that's exactly what man is. He's still incomplete. Therefore, Sri Aurobindo, the mother would say, that man is suffering because he is not yet complete. If he wants eternal happiness, let him be the complete man. So it is in this logic that Sri Aurobindo says, matter, life, mind, and obviously nature will not stop at this. Nature will go further and reveal the new step. I'll give you another simpler example. You know this antenna, you know, you have this radio antenna on the top of that. Mm-hmm. How does an antenna function? You pull that antenna up, right, and then push it back. When you push it back, what happens? One inside the other, they are all inside there. When I completely push the antenna, I just see that this thing. This outer is called matter. You pull one antenna, you're the next one. This is called life. But is this empty here? No. This has got all the other three here. If I got an antenna, all the other three are there. Only one is out. Now I pull the next antenna until there are two in there. If there are three in this, two in there. So this is called man. And I pull out one more antenna. This is called superman. So matter is nothing but the full antenna inside. So that is why, if you understand this, why Sri Aurobindo says matter can be transformed. Matter is divine. We think it is not divine, but it is like saying, oh, there is nothing in the antenna, there is only one ring or one little thing. But somebody says, no, don't be impatient, pull that. And you keep pulling and you see level after level coming up. So he says, nature has come to this level, but there is one more step nature is going to take. And that step Sri Aurobindo has foreseen. With his yogic experience, he has seen that new step coming. Savitri is full of the descriptions of that new world. How he looks, what he does, the whole thing is a description there. So it is not a poetry, Savitri is not poetry. Savitri is Sri Aurobindo's spiritual autobiography. So if you want to know who Sri Aurobindo and the mother are, read Savitri. Of course, externally biographies there are plenty, but Sri Aurobindo and the mother said, our outer life is not at all important. Because we have had the inner life, which only they could write. And fortunately, Sri Aurobindo has given us that autobiography and left it for us. So this is the concept of the evolution that I was talking about, that nature herself is going closer to the divine, as I said here. Now, this is why Sri Aurobindo calls that all life is yoga actually. But what is really integral yoga doing is it is following exactly nature's process. That means it does not, in nature, do we say that women are not allowed in my ashram. Nature never says that. In nature, do we say this kind of activity, say playing football, is not allowed? Not at all. But in some yogas, they would say, no, women should not be coming into yoga. Children should not be doing this, and man should not be doing this, we should not be going to movies, we should not go to play football. But Sri Aurobindo says, no. My yoga is exactly the same thing as nature's yoga. So if it's nature's yoga, that means I have to include everything and everybody on this face of earth. It's not meant for Hindus or Christians or Muslims, there's no division. Because nature doesn't make any division. For it, the entire earth is one. So Sri Aurobindo says, my life, my yoga is also same. I embrace whole of humanity, every person, in spite of his caste, creed, nationality, age, everything. So he has immediately spread his hands to embrace the whole earth, saying, all are welcome to my yoga, because it is nature's own yoga. But the difference is, nature left to itself, it says, will bring the supermind, definitely. Because just as it brought man after life, he is a good example somewhere. He says, when chimpanzee, the highest monkey, was developed, nature did not ask chimpanzee should I bring man or not. It brought forth the new species, beyond the chimpanzee. When it felt the need that there must be a new revelation, a higher being, it brought it out without asking permission of the chimpanzee. Similarly, nature would bring forth the Superman also